On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Upon us, like, I don't know, a bad case of athlete's foot, a new week is upon us. Three straight Supreme Court of the United States filibusters. Will we go for four tomorrow? I don't know, but I feel one coming on. I apologize in advance, dadgummit. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that's where you go if you want to get access, say, to the chat room, which is both free and easy to access. And you are heartily invited to join in that ongoing conversation there at. Just run right over. If you've never been in before, you'll notice that setting up an account's really, really easy. Let's see. Good evening, Anatole. Good evening, Devin. Good evening, Mr. Gibson. Good evening, SKU. Good evening, Texas T. And our moderators, Sparky and Texas Betsy, in the room. So, by all means, jump right in. Yep. Devin's on the ball. Scrotus! Yeah, the rats have gotten us again. And we'll be dealing with that later today. You know, that the pity of all this is Moran Monday, and we're supposed to be having fun with, you know, morans. Creepy bastards that they are. Yeah. But we're not. We're going to be dealing with the ongoing onslaught against the female half of the species in this country, as practiced by the Supreme Court of the United States, and in particular, the rats. Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, who've now gone on vacation. Yes, 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 vacation. You know, that's nice. That's nice. I'd love a vacation. I don't know when the last one I had was. Let's see. But, no, let's see. There's a pop-up player at headonradionetwork.com. Also, the ubiquitous PayPal account. Here we are at the end. Here we are at the end of the month of June, and I want to send thanks out to Dave and to Sandra for helping out to make sure that we've got a fighting chance to end June okay. Thank you very much. And thanks to Leroy as well. We do have a fighting chance, thanks to you all. And we're going to try to raise our typical $150 this evening and maybe get July off to a jumping good start. The PayPal button's at headonradionetwork.com, and so too is the snail mail address. If you need the snail, I said snail mail. I'm sorry, the traditional postal address. If you go to the tab at headonradionetwork.com called Contribute and you scroll down, you will find, in fact, the traditional mail postal address at the bottom of the page. So either way is fine. If you want to go postal, that's not a joke. Just shoot me a note so I can tell Boss Man Wayne he doesn't have to wear his spider-proof gloves when he reaches into the echo chamber that is the mailbox. And I will do that. And remember, checks and money orders should not be made payable to Bob Kincaid, but should be made payable to The Horn or Head On Communications, something like that. That way, Boss Man Wayne can actually deal with them with our within our account. Oh, where to begin? Where to begin? You know where we have to begin. I don't like where we have to begin, but we have to begin there just the same. And to be perfectly clear, let's understand there wasn't just one screwing went down courtesy of the Supreme Court of the United States today. There were two. Yeah. There was the Hobby Lobby case, and there was the I'm sorry. I can't remember the first name, versus Quinn. It was basically a case about whether or not unions had a right to be paid for the collective bargaining that they do for the mugwumps who don't want to be part of the union but want the union wages. It's called Fair Share. And Sammy Alito said, nah, screw the unions. Yeah, really. But we will start with Hobby Lobby for a variety of reasons, just because it presents so many opportunities. Now, a lot of people think that this is a case about contraception and religious objections to contraception. It's not. Because just by way of beginning, before we get into the meat of the whole thing, let's remember something, please. There's a whole lot of contraception out there that Hobby Lobby and those good, God-fearing, upstanding followers of Christ Jesus are perfectly willing to pay for. Here's a few examples, courtesy of Raw Story. Yeah, they are still more than happy, for instance, to over at Hobby Lobby, to pay for erectile dysfunction drugs, so that if granddad can't quite get it on like he used to, well, if he's working for Hobby Lobby or he's got coverage through Hobby Lobby, Hobby Lobby, in the name of Jesus, is more than happy to help pay for him to have a stiffy. My God, it'll make his withered old member jump like a snake in a microwave. Yep, so that's still being covered. And it runs about $15 a pill. Mm-hmm. They're also happy to pay, in the name of Jesus, for vacuum erection devices. Yeah. The penis pumps. Yeah. Those usually run between $300 and $500 a pop, huh, to insurance companies. Then penile implants are still covered as well. So folks who are worried about their beloved's ability to... Yeah, I mean, this little push-button thing, and it makes a guy's penis sound like the beginning of Pink Floyd's Welcome to the Machine. Yeah, those are still covered. Vasectomies, in which all the little Jesus sperms are kept from ever getting out the end of the Jesus penis, they're still covered. Absolutely still covered. Don't know what the women are so darned upset about. And then my personal favorite, circumcision is still covered. If you're out there working at the Hobby Lobby, yep, you had to get pregnant because you couldn't get contraception, and so now you've given birth to a bouncing baby boy, and by God, Hobby Lobby's insurance plan is going to pay for you to have his little penis mutilated. Let's all stand up and sing a chorus of God Bless the USA. Yep, no religious objections to any of those things on the part of Hobby Lobby. Yep. Inspiring, isn't it? No IUDs. No plain old garden variety birth control pills. No RU486, no OU812, nope, no morning after pill. Now, none of those things, because they have a conscience objection at Hobby Lobby. because the good, God-fearing, upstanding Christian owners feel like that their First Amendment religious liberties is being trampled upon by all of them trashy women's that wants the pill or that little copper thingy in there, you know where. That's violating their love of Jesus. On the other hand, however, if you're a long-term employee, especially in an executive position with the Hobby Lobby Corporation, you're probably in their Hobby Lobby Mutual Fund, in which case you are heavily invested in pharmaceutical companies that manufacture abortifacients and contraceptive birth control pills and other hormonal supplements and intrauterine devices and the abortion morning after pill and oh yeah, you're heavily invested in that. And apparently since it's making you money instead of costing you money, it has absolutely no impact whatsoever on your religious values, because you are, after all, a fundamentalist Christian, and that means you are also a hypocrite. Yep. You betcha. Oh, Hobby Lobby. Now, I have a number of questions, one of which is why my headphone cord is underneath the roller to my chair. Time out there. All better now. Goody, goody. But I do. I have questions. Because, see, I don't believe for a minute that this has anything whatsoever to do with Christianity. It has everything to do with because money. And it has more to do, do you think for a minute that there would have been an objection to contraception if this had been some sort of health plan put forward by a traditional American president? And I use traditional in the sense of the word as established by a legislator in North Carolina. Our traditional American presidents? No, we've got a non-traditional American president, and we got that Kenyan Muslim kind of healthcare thing going on, and that's what tripped the moral objection wire. They're not morally opposed to contraception. They're obviously paying for it and invested in it. Their moral objection and their crisis of conscience came from the fact that it is associated with a man who is president of the United States whose skin is darker than that of a brown paper grocery bag. Yeah, but I do. I do have some questions. For Hobby Lobby. And they're not just questions that come from, no. These are questions that come from, well, that book they worship. There's a couple of instances. I'm thinking in particular of 1 Corinthians. I've been thinking about this all day long. We will, of course, be using the King James Version because it's ever so much more fun. Okay, let's have a look at the text here. Because this is actually Saul, the former member of the temple priesthood police in Jerusalem who went on the lam, changed his name to Paul, and reinvented Christianity, or invented Christianity. There was nothing to reinvent. He just invented Christianity. He begins the ninth chapter of 1 Corinthians by asking, am I not an apostle? Because, see, there were a lot of people who were saying he wasn't, seeing as how he'd never walked with Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi. Am I not an apostle? Am I not free? Have I not seen Jesus Christ our Lord? Are not ye my work in the Lord? If I be not an apostle unto others, yet doubtless I am to you, for the seal of mine apostleship are ye in the Lord. In other words, I don't give a damn what anybody else says. You think I'm an apostle, and that makes me an apostle. So he's trying to establish some degree of credibility here, sort of like the you know, when five guys who wouldn't know a uterus from a cantaloupe start opining about how we should treat people who have them. And he goes on, this is allegedly a letter to the church at Corinth, which is the isthmus there between the Attic Peninsula and the Peloponnese. And he goes on and talks about how he's trying to prove his case as to who he is. And he says, for our sakes, no doubt, this is written, that he that ploweth should plow in hope, and he that thresheth in hope should be partaker of his hope. If we have sown unto you spiritual things, is it a great thing if we shall reap your carnal things? If others be partakers of this power over you, are we not rather? His Greek was not the best. All of this is written in something called Koine, which is a kind of gutter Greek. It's a Greek that would be recognized as the absolute most barely literate of Greek by the speakers of high classical Greek. Do ye not know that they which minister about holy things live of the things of the temple? And they which wait at the altar are partakers with the altar? Even so hath the Lord ordained that they which preach the gospel should live of the gospel. But I've used none of these things, neither have I written these things, that it should be so done unto me. For it were better for me to die than that any man should make my glorying void. For though I preach the gospel, I have nothing to glory of. For necessity is laid upon me. Yea, woe is unto me if I preach not the gospel. For if I do this thing willingly, I have a reward. But if against my will, a dispensation of the gospel is committed unto me. What is my reward then? Verily, that when I preach the gospel, I may make the gospel of Christ without charge, that I abuse not my power in the gospel. I'm not a fan of the Saul Paul club. But that's pretty profound on his part. He's saying, I'm doing this because I'm called to do this. I got to do this. And if I was out there doing this and I wasn't called to do this, then it would be kind of shitty and hollow. And then he admits that he'll do anything for a conversion. He says, unto the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might gain the Jews. To them that are under the law as under the law, that I might gain them that are under the law. To them that are without law as without law, being not without law to God, but under the law to Christ, that I might gain them that are without law. To the weak I became as weak, that I might gain the weak. I am made all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. In other words, he's talking about the ends justifying the means, which is pretty much what we're talking about with the Hobby Lobby decision. There was an outcome that the rats and Kennedy wanted to reach, and they were willing to move heaven and earth to get there. All right? So that's kind of his philosophy. Now we have to run backwards, however, to 1 Corinthians 8. Because there's not just him justifying himself, it's him telling people how to behave. And this was an expansion, and these were problems that were not had in the Jewish world, okay? Because there was an entire social and religious structure built around the entire worship universe. But Paul, Saul, takes the thing out into the Hellenized world. There had been some Hellenization in Palestine. Some civilization had been brought there. But not a lot. And Paul heads out into the Hellenized world to take his good news of the resurrection, as he understands it. I think he was a con man, but never mind. But they had questions that never got brought up in Jerusalem. Like, let's say someone takes a bullock and sacrifices it to old Athena Parthenos, Athena the Virgin. I bet, how many of you knew that Mary wasn't the first virgin mother? Huh? Yeah, Athena the Virgin. And so they're asking Paul questions like, well, okay, so like, you know, they sacrificed the bullock over there at Athena Parthenos' temple, you know, and like after the sacrifice, sometimes you can get a pretty good deal on some pretty tasty prime rib, you know, Paul. Is it okay? I mean, can we let go and buy the sacrificed meat? And Paul says, as concerning, therefore, the eating of those things that are offered in sacrifice unto idols, we know that an idol is nothing in the world, and that there is none other god but one. See, he got the first part right. Those Greek gods, they are entirely imaginary. What he didn't finish up, though, was, and I'm hustling you another one who is entirely imaginary. No, no, don't smarten up the chumps. So he says, so what about eating the sacrificial meat? Well, we know their gods are imaginary. For though there be that are called gods, whether in heaven or in earth, as there be gods many and lords many, but to us there is but one God, the Father, of whom are all things, yada, yada, yada. How be it, and really there's a point here, I promise. How be it, there is not in every man that knowledge, for some with conscience of the idol unto this hour eat it as a thing offered unto an idol, and their conscience being weak is defiled. But meat commendeth us not to God. In other words, just because we're eating meat doesn't mean we're communing with the God. I mean, just because we're, I mean, you know, that's like saying picking up a piece of pita bread and eating that's like eating Jesus. Oh, wait. He says, but meat commendeth us not to God, for neither if we eat are we the better, neither if we eat not are we the worst. It doesn't make any difference, he says. Then he says, but take heed, lest by any means this liberty of yours, liberty, Wolverines, take heed, lest by any means this liberty of yours become a stumbling block to them that are weak. For if any man see thee which hast knowledge, sit at meat in the idol's temple, shall not the conscience of him which is weak be emboldened to eat those things which are offered to idols? And through thy knowledge shall the weak brother perish for whom Christ died? But when ye sin so against the brethren, and wound their weak conscience, ye sin against Christ. Wherefore, if meat make my brother to offend, I will eat no flesh while the world standeth, lest I make my brother to offend. Oh, Hobby Lobby boys, I think they're hot. I think the little demons is jumping up on the bellows in hell for you, buddy. And the stumbling block business, and he uses that metaphor in 1 Corinthians 8, and he uses it again in this would be his Dark Side of the Moon, the book of Romans. It's one long hallucination. But in Romans 14:13, Paul says, Saul, come on, really? Let us not therefore judge one another any more, but judge this rather, that no man put a stumbling block or an occasion to fall in his brother's way. In all the arguments against the theocratic goons from Hobby Lobby, this has not been brought up that I'm aware of. The Hobby Lobby theocratic, come on, they're capitalists, please. This is about because money. This is not about because Jesus. Because if it was about because Jesus and they had closely held religious beliefs about the demon-sodden nature of birth control pills, they wouldn't be invested in the manufacture of them. And this is how you can know that they're fakes. Oh, yes, Lord, yes. This is how you can know that they're fakes. What's their name? Green? Is that their name? These are the same creeps who bailed out Oral Roberts University, okay? Back when Oral Roberts' son, Robert, was spending, you know, student loan money on... who knows what, Hawaiian vacations, whatever. And when his wife was texting little Oral Roberts University freshman and, trying to be a MILF wannabe. Actually, she's probably a GILF, if she is. Anyway, that's kind of sexist, I apologize. The Green family that runs Hobby Lobby have done just about the worst thing that poor old Paul can imagine. He has caused others to hate Christ. They have caused others to reject Christianity. Because I don't know about you, but I have a feeling that I could safely say that it's a pretty good bet that there are millions of Americans who have today said, that's Christianity? That's Christianity? A religion that will pay for a penis pump, but not a birth control pill? A religion that'll pay for a vasectomy, but not an IUD? This is Christianity? I don't want anything to do with Christianity. Christianity sucks. Christianity is cruel. Christianity is immoral. Christianity is driven by money. Christianity is filthy. And according to Saul Paul, they would be correct. But see, that's one of the fun things about being a bajillionaire owner of a shop that sells crap from China to help make you a better candle maker. When you've got enough money, even the preachers won't tell you the truth. See how it works? So not only is this a bold move toward theocracy on the part of the Supreme Court of the United States, and particularly its rats contingent, bless her heart, Justice Ginsburg wrote a blistering dissent, and she said, I fear the court has wandered into a minefield. And reading that, I thought to myself, would that you were speaking literally. Jay Cruzan with a message saying, "Don't worry, Bob. I have a needle that all these assholes have to pass through before they get to their non-existent God." But that's the thing, Jay Cruzan. He's not non-existent to them. He's more real than you or me. And he's perfectly willing to pay for vasectomies, but not the birth control pill. You know, a woman can get off the birth control pill and later get pregnant. Vasectomies are forever, pretty much. What a pity. What a pity that there is no evangelical fundamentalist so-called Christian out there who will look at the Greens and say, "You know, I know, okay, so you don't want to, but you still got to because you're sitting there." I mean, yeah, these aren't stumbling blocks. These are bowling balls you're putting in front of potential believers, your weak brothers and sisters that you want to lead to the joyous glories of the of everlasting life and a new birth in Christ resurrected. This isn't satire. I'm deadly in earnest about this. There was not a Christian preacher out there who could get through the money and the phalanx of lawyers who made a fortune on this, by the way. And by the way, there's that other little passage from somewhere in St. Paul's Maunderings where he talks about don't take access, don't take recourse to the civil courts. Solve these things among yourselves. They could have gone a-witnessing to their employees, their wildly underpaid employees. They could have put a little tract about the little precious snowflake fetuses in every paycheck, and nobody could have done a damn thing about it. See how it works. All religions, if you take them seriously, have an element of work to them. Now, I don't go in for that work because it seems to be a futile act. But if you take it seriously, like I was raised to take it seriously, and we discussed that briefly with Roger on Friday, then you have to work at it. And you have to be, and it begs for constant awareness. You know, the Jain is constantly aware, trying to make sure that the Jain does no harm to any other life. The Jews are depending on one's degree of faithfulness, based on our conversation with Will last week, constantly in search of being obedient unto the law. Muslims have the various words of the Quran and the sayings of the Prophet that they have to be constantly aware of if you're going to be serious about this, if it's anything more than parlor tricks. And it would appear that this is all just an economic parlor trick for the folks who run Hobby Lobby and Conestoga Industries. No, really, that was the companion case. I mean, even their own book says that the way to destruction is broad. Now, you know, how can you square that with having a billion Christians? And that way's got to be pretty broad, doesn't it? not straight and narrow. In the chat room, Lottie says, today's decision was not a setback. It only shows how far we haven't progressed. In a way, yeah. It also shows retrograde motion. I will appeal to the international contingent of the Horn Family Commune Congregation and ask if this would ever even come up in your highest courts. And if it came up, how long would it take for it to get bounced right out again? Shut up! You see, really, the Hobby Lobby case from the Supreme Court could have just as easily been a two-word opinion. Shut up! But we're running into trouble now because the First Amendment, as I noted earlier today, has become, for this bunch on the Supreme Court, not a shield, but a cudgel. Those who so desperately wanted the Bill of Rights at the time of the creation of the Constitution and the ratification thereof wanted it with the express purpose of making sure that government never ever did what governments had been prone to do in the past, and that is endorse one religion over another. And they had lots of examples to choose from. It was 1787, and if you listened very, very hard, in the faint distance, you could almost begin to hear the squeaky turnings of the wheels of the tumbrils of the French Revolution. And that culture in which the church and the priesthood had become not only a nuisance, but a menace to the people. England itself had lived through centuries of blood and gore trying to figure out whose version of eternity should best be followed. A man who dared to print the Bible in English that any English reader could read was burned at the stake because of state preference for religion. In the young country, some states wanted to impose a tax in favor of one state religion, maybe for the maintenance of schools. And it was uniformly understood that that was intolerable. And so, whether it be freedom of expression, artistic, political, religious, whether it be freedom of religious choice, whether it be freedom of the press, the entirety, and especially the Establishment Clause, the entirety of the First Amendment was created as a shield behind which the people could stand and be protected against an incursion by government into their spiritual lives or lack thereof. Because remember, an adherent to one faith is by definition an atheist unto all others. And there falls by the wayside the assertion of the fundamentalist, the evangelical right, that there's no such thing as freedom from religion. If you are a happy practicing Roman Catholic, the First Amendment provides you with freedom from the Baptists. There was a very healthy Jewish community in Philadelphia whose synagogue Ben Franklin was an honorary member. And for them, the First Amendment was freedom from Christianity. It wasn't very long at all before the first Muslims came to our shores. Well, these shores. What do you mean, ours? with the building of the railroads would come Asian peoples who didn't necessarily want to be Christians and who damn sure didn't have much in the way of rights at all. The African peoples that we kidnapped, stole, and sent across and brought across the Atlantic brought their religions with them, and we still have them in vestigial form to this day. And all their avatars. They had no shield. They had no personhood. And so one of the first and best examples of the abuse of an established religion was the fact that slave owners were allowed to force their particular brand of Christianity upon the African slave population. So if you happen to be a slave to a Roman Catholic slave owner, guess what? You wound up Roman Catholic. If you were a slave of an Anglican slave owner, you became Catholic light. If you were the slave of a Scots Calvinist, we call them Presbyterians now, that's what you became. Remember, AME stands for African Methodist Episcopal. But for people who were not held in bondage slavery, the First Amendment served as a shield. But now, in the last week, with the Sweet Granny McCullen decision, and with, in fact, Harris versus Quinn, and with, in fact, Hobby Lobby and Conestoga, we see that this court is willing to beat this country about the head and shoulders with religion. And for those who are paying attention, that should be terrifying. Notes coming in from Steve. I thought that only the evil harlot Catholic Church was against birth control. Funny how we Catholics are right when it comes down to screwing with the black guy in the White House. Yeah, see? Yeah, that one in our White House. Yeah, Juanita pointed out on my Facebook page earlier that when John Kennedy ran for the presidency in 1960, he had to tell whether or not he would be ruled by the Pope at Rome. Oddly enough, nobody asked that of Fat Tony Scalia, or Slappy Thomas, or Sammy Alito, or John Roberts, or Anthony Kennedy. Nope. Michael pointing out, Ian Masters of Background Briefing, I know, Michael says, I know you've been on his show, just want to plug it. There you go. Made the wonderful point that he couldn't find any conscientious objection to China's, where about 99% of their crap comes from, one-child policy. Oh, no, they're upset about it. They just can't do anything about it. The evangelical fundamentalists are constantly going on and on about how the Chinese women are forced to get abortitated because of the demonic communist one-child policy, because what Jesus wants is for China to have 8 billion people all by itself, because that's more souls to save for the kingdom of heaven. Pardon my sarcasm. But I'm sick of this. I am well and truly sick of this. And it's frightening, because once again we talk about wrongs without a remedy. Because in providing a remedy to the poor, religiously persecuted millionaires of Hobby Lobby, the Supreme Court extended its both middle fingers to the women who work for it. One wonders, for instance, if Hobby Lobby can now question their potential employees. Do you intend to use birth control? Oh, no, we're not saying that because we're going to discriminate based on that. We're saying that just so that we can inform them that we, by God, will not pay for it. Don't hire the ones who answer yes. This is becoming a very, very, very frightening country. And because it's a matter of Christian conscience, oh yes, of course it is, of course it is. Because this is a matter of Christian conscience, we have to take into account the Christians whose consciences are being so solicitously protected. Oh, absolutely. We have to have an appreciation for the deep and abiding moral sense that these followers of the Prince of Peace manifest. Yes, yes, yes. And in order to do that, we have to sort of turn back the clock a little bit. To a story that we covered last week. You may recall that we had coverage last week of 35-year-old Christian radio host John Balow. John Balow wasn't just some guy working a job. He was the morning drive voice. Of a Christian radio station, WCSG, owned by Cornerstone Media. He had traveled to Russia. To witness to the little orphans. And he was arrested on June 20th at the Gaylord Christian Music Festival in Gaylord, Michigan, because he had been soliciting sex with children. Apparently there was enough of his Christianity yet remaining. How much of a scrap is required when you're a person who has sex with little children, I don't know. That confession became good for the soul. So after his arrest, when he was interviewed, upon questioning, no torture involved, he gave consent to search a storage unit that he told them about. When the investigators opened that storage unit, The first time I read this, my stomach did flip-flops. It really did. When he gave consent for them to open that storage unit, investigators found a suitcase. Inside the suitcase were children's socks and costumes for children and duct tape and four pairs of handcuffs and zip ties and rubber gloves and chains and a padlock. There were also multiple file folders, and in these file folders were magazine and newspaper clippings about missing children and clippings of children's obituaries. Also in the storage unit was a bag, and in the bag were a number of dismembered body parts from a medical mannequin. Feeling a little queasy? Me too. Remember, Cornerstone Media Group, the owner of WCSG, you may recall, we played their press release in which they asked their listeners to pray for this guy who had a suitcase full of children's socks and costumes and duct tape and four pairs of handcuffs and zip ties and rubber gloves and chains and a padlock and newspaper articles about missing children and little children's obituaries. Yeah, the Cornerstone Christian Media Group asked for people to pray for him. There were three other topics before they got around to, oh, by the way, pray for any of the children he might have had sex with. This, then, a pluribus unum, is one of those delicate sensibilities for which the rats on the Supreme Court were so concerned that they had to make sure that a woman working for Hobby Lobby or some other Christian organization couldn't obtain birth control under a commercial contract of insurance. And see, that's the next layer of the onion. I read the opinion. Don't. I mean, do, of course, by all means, but if you do, there will be hooting and hollering, if you're anything at all like me. The second layer is this notion of the marriage, not of Christ and his church, but of Christ and his business. Mm-hmm. Because Christianity, as if we didn't know it before, is a high-dollar business. How long, then, before Hobby Lobby applies for 501c3 charitable organization status? You think they wouldn't do it? Please. Jay Cruzen with a question. Back to Hobby Lobby, and that's where we've been all along. A question, do they not realize that their insurance costs will go up? Pregnancy is a hell of a lot more expensive than birth control pills. Am I wrong? No, you're not wrong. Next up is perhaps a religious objection to paying for obstetric care. Oh, this thing, well, like Justice Ginsburg said, they've walked merrily into a minefield. They've opened the door to more litigation. Oh, sure, they said they were crafting this is narrowly crafted. This is a small, closely held corporation. It's not like it's IBM or anything. Well, how long do you think it would take to turn IBM into a small, closely held corporation? You think they wouldn't do it if they could get away with it? Actually, it depends on how stupid the corporation is. Because not only have these fine, upstanding, God-fearing followers of the Prince of Peace alienated tons of people from Christianity, I mean, they can wallpaper their store with pictures of Jesus now. Everybody knows what they're about. But they've alienated people from their business. I just had a comment on one of my Facebook posts from Katie who says, I want you to know that I'm into scrapbooking and I haven't set foot in Hobby Lobby in years because of their positions. You know what? Hobby Lobby would like to have her business. They ain't gonna get it. And that's another question. Now, I'm sure, because they're Christians, they are prone to screaming persecution. And I'm sure that the multi-millionaire who is the paterfamilias of the Hobby Lobby family, I'm sure that if somebody brings him a cold cup of coffee, he feels like he's suffering in the name of Jesus. But they put on the Persecution Act really, really well. So here's the next phase. Call it Chick-fil-A 2. People who love people who are women and who understand this decision to be the odious cudgeling of America with the religion industry that it is will stay away from Hobby Lobby. We'll never go in there again. We'll absolutely not set foot in the place. On the other hand, if it hasn't happened already, and I'll be surprised if it hasn't, somebody will send it to me if it has. On the other hand, the Christo-fascists will go in droves to Hobby Lobby. Doubt me? We have to support our Christian brothers, never mind the sisters, at Hobby Lobby. You ever been in a Hobby Lobby? I made the mistake once. I mean, it's a Hobby Lobby. I was thinking maybe I'd get back into my youthful hobby of building models of sailing ships. They don't sell models there. I thought those were hobbies. No. But anyway, I'm willing to predict that sales at Hobby Lobbies here in Appalachistan and out in Greater Jesus Land are going to go through the roof. There are going to be more people pouring through Hobby Lobby's doors because they think that somehow they're pleasing Jeebus by getting their crap made in China by some kid chained to a table at Hobby Lobby than if they got it somewhere else, like at, you know, the evil, demonic, satanic Wally World. Note coming in from Ron in Raleigh. Have you had a chance to read any of the comment threads on, say, HuffPo concerning the Hobby Lobby case? The only question I have is, where are we going and what are we doing in this handbasket? Oh, no, I haven't, Ron, but no, I get my gloating delivered directly to me. This came in to me from Matthew Faraci. That's Matthew at faithdrivenconsumer.com. Matthew with two T's. Oh, I'm sorry. Matthew F, M-A-T-T-H-E-W-F, at faithdrivenconsumer.com. SCOTUS reaffirms rights of faith-driven consumers, all Americans. What does that mean? Faith-driven consumers are all Americans? Because they didn't reaffirm my rights. There's already, see, this case was decided regarding the Religious Freedom Reformation Act that was passed by Congress and, of course, signed into law by who else? Bill Clinton. After a case in Oregon where a man was refused employment because at a pre-employment drug screening, he, a practitioner of Native religion, had peyote in his bloodstream. He had apparently gone on a vision quest. That man can't have a job in Merca. And so, cases have been decided under the well before this one. It has been decided, for instance, because the Quakers, yeah, the Quakers filed a suit saying, hey, look, we're Quakers. We've been here a really long time. There's a picture of one of us on the on your oatmeal box, for God's sakes. I mean, one of the people who was critical in the Constitutional Convention, Ben Franklin, was a Quaker. William Penn was a Quaker. My beloved Agnes's multi-great-grandfather, John Bartram, America's first naturalist, America's first environmentalist, was a Quaker. And they are really into peace and nonviolence. So imagine every April 15th rolling around and the Quakers sitting down to do their taxes and just knowing that little demons are jumping on the bellows down in hell waiting for them because they're about to write their income tax check to pay for some bombs to be dropped on brown people. And they went to the Supreme Court and said, listen, this was really about our conscience. And the Supreme Court of the United States, including Fat Tony Scalia, said, fuck your conscience. You're paying for bombs whether you like it or not. Screw your religion. Ooh, I think my barbed wire just bit me really nicely. I think I just atoned for some sin there. So Matthew Faraci, Matthew F. at faithdrivenconsumer.com, Dateline, Raleigh, North Carolina. Sorry, Ron, you brought the subject up. Faith-driven consumer, TM. What's God need with a starship or a trademark? Who knew? The group behind the IStandWithPhil.com movement. No, really. This was the group that ginned up a hustle to make themselves some money defending a man who makes little boxes that make noises that make ducks think they want to have sex with them. Faith-driven consumer, the group behind IStandWithPhil.com movement, which played a leading role in Phil Robertson's return to Duck Dynasty. Man, there's the power of the grace of Christ Jesus. The OpenZilla campaign for workplace tolerance at Mozilla. The ongoing Year of the Bible movie initiative, tracking the commercial viability of major Hollywood films courting faith audiences. And the FlipThisDecision.com campaign, supporting the Benham twins. Oh, really? So, yeah, these are people. This is an outfit that's running a hustle based on imaginary Christian persecution. continues to advocate for 46 million faith-driven consumers who spend $1.75 trillion annually and who know absolutely nothing about Christianity and apparently never read that line about not putting stumbling blocks in it. Never mind. They thump it. They don't read it. Today, the Supreme Court of the United States confirmed that profit-seeking corporations can hold a religious view under federal law. The landmark 5-4 ruling favors Christian-owned companies Hobby Lobby and Conestoga Wood. Conestoga Wood what? Well, maybe it should, if it won't. Dear God. But it's true. It favors... This is an admission on the part of faith-driven consumer that the Supreme Court of the United States has used a cudgel to beat this country over the head with an establishment of religion. Chris Stone, founder of Faith-Driven Consumer and a certified brand strategist. Really? Jesus has a certified brand strategist? He couldn't just drive his brand to the top of the market with a wink of his eye and a nudge to the old man? Has issued the following statement on this landmark ruling. We're encouraged today that the Supreme Court reaffirmed our essential constitutional rights, both as Americans and people of faith. Corporations do have the right to pursue policies that are aligned with their religious views and are once again protected from the forced adoption of practices that violate their conscience. Man, you would think that somebody was just going to hold down that green, the whole Green family, and just take a straw and shoot birth control pills right down their throats. We regret that this ruling applied only to closely held corporations and eagerly await the day that the court reaffirms this same protection for all corporations, regardless of structure. As advocates for 46 million faith-driven consumers who spend $1.75 trillion every year, that's twice they've mentioned that. Wonder why that's important to Jesus. We're encouraged that this decision enables our community to continue to support companies such as Hobby Lobby, which earned 4.5 out of 5 stars in our faith-driven consumer company reviews. Wonder how many checks Hobby Lobby's written to faith-driven consumer. They claim to represent 15% of the U.S. population. Being Christians, they are, of course. What am I looking for here? Yeah, lying! But no, there's been all kinds of gloating here. Let me see if I can find another one just for the fun of it. Oh, here's one. From Michael Rudin, M-R-U-D-I-N at sbpublicaffairs.com. This is from the Beckett Fund. Named after the former Archbishop of Canterbury who tried to overturn via religious dogma the English throne. The U.S. Supreme Court granted a landmark victory for religious liberty today, ruling in the case of Burwell versus Hobby Lobby that individuals do not lose their religious freedom when they open a family business. The court ruled 5-4 in favor of David and Barbara Green and their family business, Hobby Lobby. Isn't it interesting that the converse of that is also true? Because what they did, the Supreme Court also ruled today that employees, individuals, do lose their religious freedom when they open a family business or when they go to work for a family business. If you go to work for Hobby Lobby, you lose your freedom under the Affordable Care Act to have contraceptive care paid for you, even if it is a closely and deeply held religious belief that you should have autonomy over your own body. Hobby Lobby ruling that they will not be required to violate their faith by including four potentially life-terminating drugs and devices in the company's health insurance plan or pay severe fines. This is a landmark decision for religious freedom. But then they get down to brass tacks. Like I said at the very beginning, this isn't about religion. This is about that one in their White House. You know, the non-traditional president. The handwriting on the wall is on the wall. The court has strongly signaled that the mandate is in trouble in the non-profit cases, too. They're after the Obama Affordable Care Act. This is an attempt to enforce death by a thousand cuts on the ACA. Now, it goes without saying we wouldn't have any of these problems, and, well, Hobby Lobby wouldn't have any religious objections if this was just Medicare for all, universal single payer, and business wasn't anywhere near it. Because then how does Hobby Lobby get into the Supreme Court? Wait a minute, we got Medicare for all, and it covers contraception, and we don't want, but you don't have anything to do with it. Go away. Shut up. Oh, this thing goes on and on and on. It's really sickening. And let's see, the Independent Women's Forum, another country heard from. Oh, no, let's go to Project 21, Black Conservatives. Black activists with the Project 21 Black Leadership Network. Did you know you were being led? Are cheering today's U.S. Supreme Court ruling that frees employers with strong religious and family beliefs from being forced to pay exorbitant fines to practice their faith. You see how they lie? Now, these are all Christian outfits, and they all have to lie about the decision. Now, let's see. This comes from info@nationalcenter.org, the National Center for Public Policy Research. J-K-E-N-T, at nationalcenter.org. That would be Judy Kent. They all have to lie. And here's one of the big pitches. The companies involved in the case, whose owners are devout Christians, opposed only four of 20 forms of contraception the mandate required employers to offer to employees for free under Obamacare because they believe these select few items end human life after conception. Notice the use of the most dangerous word in the English language. They believe it. An IUD does not end human life after conception. No. Project 21's Derek Green, a doctoral candidate in ministerial studies, said President Obama diligently persisted in the ideological fight to force those of strong beliefs to violate their faith. It indicates to me Obama's own apparent deeply held belief is in the power of government rather than and at the expense of submission and obedience to God. Wait a minute, submission? Isn't that the actual translation of the word Islam? Submission to Allah? The court was right to restrain such a dangerous cultural and political precedent. Yuck. And then, come on, where is it? I mean, Tea Party Patriots, SCOTUS upholds First Amendment protections. Oh, there she is. There's Victoria Coley of the Independent Women's Forum. Press at IWF.org.
The Independent Women's Forum applauds the decision of the Supreme Court in Sebelius versus Hobby Lobby, Inc. and Conestoga Wood Specialties Court versus Sebelius. This ruling is a victory for anyone who believes in limited government and freedom of conscience rights or religious liberty. This lawsuit has wrongfully been depicted as a conflict between religious employers and women, but the real question before the court was whether there are limits to what government can compel from its citizens, and if we are still a country that believes in freedom of conscience.
Sister, we haven't been one of those since your buddy Fat Tony told the Quakers to go packing because they didn't like bombing brown people. Honest to goodness, I really do. Oh, yeah, okay, note coming in from David in South Carolina. The line out of Hobby Lobby's doors will be like the Chick-fil-A line after their anti-gay policy was revealed. Just call them the Scrotum Court. Robert writing in from Australia, we don't have the U.S. Constitution here in Australia. Good for you. So we don't have these weird issues. We have universal single-payer health care, so this would never come up, as employers do not offer health insurance, so a case like this would never end up in front of the High Court of Australia. Most religious Australians that I know go to church on Sundays, and that's about it. But we do have our fair share of religious wackos, Hillsong Church. Remember, our prayer meeting Wednesday offertory hymn comes from a Chaser parody of Hillsong. Hillsong Church started small and is now a commercial enterprise, wasn't it always? Politicians will drop by only before elections to talk to the congregation, something I find sickening. We've got a few rogue pollies trying to get insane bills through Parliament. There's a clown in Western Australia trying to legislate that the unborn are legally fully human. I don't see it getting very far. But the kind of insanity you're describing this morning just doesn't happen here. Although now that Tony Abbott's PM, anything could happen. The Liberal Party have started to attack disabled pensioners as fakers. Why? Because money. Right. Mercy sakes. But there are times, and I admit this is one, when I wish I could be a person of faith. I do. I wish I could believe in me, an invisible friend, and all the silly shit that you have to believe to have your invisible friend. And then I could pray me some imprecatory prayers right down on top of, what's their names? The Greens. You know, that let his days be numbered short upon the earth. Let his wife be without a husband. Let their children be without a father. You know, all that loving stuff that comes out of the Book of Psalms. I could do that. And in fact, I imagine there's a whole lot of people in this country who are sort of doing the same thing, only they don't know the magic fancy fundy word for it, imprecatory prayer. Now if I was to be a believer and was praying me some imprecatory prayers, I'd want something really high quality from the goddess of irony. I mean, I'm sure there are people out there who are hoping that, you know, the rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, and the Greens, and whoever the hell it is that runs Conestoga wood products, get run over by a bus, hit by a truck. You know, that kind of thing. Rolled over by a steamroller, what's his name Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Not me. If I'm going to do some imprecatory praying, I'm going to pray for something that's a real sign that my God is real. I'm going to want a piano dropped on Mr. Green or the rats. Or an anvil. Or maybe just a big sort of trapezoidal-looking thing that just has 5,000 pounds written across it. Just splat! I don't want any vagaries in my imprecatory prayers. I want the obvious. I want everybody to know. Ho ho! Oh, God! Yep. Bob warned us about the goddess of irony, and she kicked it into overdrive. You know, have Slappy Thomas choked to death on a pubic hair, something like that. But none of that's real. And it's a waste of the precious finite time that is life itself to sit around and hope for it. Even if it would be kind of fun to see Fat Tony open up that tiny umbrella and just say, Mother! You know, like Daffy Duck before, with the piano. But it's not real. But I tell you what, don't you just know? Don't you just know that the rats were loving their 250-foot buffer zone today? I mean, they had to be snickering up the robes of their sleeves. Yeah, we told sweet Granny McCullen she could get right up in a woman's face. But they can't get within 256 feet of the damn door here. Oh, we're so good. Note coming in from Greg. Abortion birth control is a healthcare issue, Bob. I wonder if the CEO of Hobby Lobby would consider a vasectomy gone wrong a right-to-life issue or a healthcare issue. Well, it's neither, because, of course, Greg, that's covered. Because women don't have vasectomies. See how it works? Ron and Raleigh, let's see. The state of Connecticut, having deeply held religious beliefs, would like to revisit Griswold versus Connecticut, believing that the case was wrongly decided. We're being forced to allow birth control in direct contravention of our deeply held religious beliefs. I can see it coming. Yep, Ron, from a mile away. That's what I've said all along. None of this is about Roe versus Wade. Everything is about Griswold. And they're showing a willingness to revisit that kind of stuff. The Quinn decision today, where unions got it stuck in them and broke off. Well, that's this bunch of jurisprudential maniacs manifesting their keen, yearning desire to go back to the era of Lochner, when essential regulations for the safety of workers were struck down by the Supreme Court as being a violation of the privity of contract. News Ninja Gene notes, doesn't this just piss you off that all this morality is ultimately just a ducking, Android won't let me swear, marketing ploy? Yeah, it does. And it is just a marketing ploy. Don't think for a minute that they haven't sat together in their closely held board meeting at Hobby Lobby. Okay, now, boys, make sure we got plenty of stock in on the latest boat from China for when the decision comes down and we win. Because the fundies, you know, the rubes, are going to come barreling through our doors to buy some picture frames for Jesus. Load up, because we're going to make out like bandits. Because money. And one last thing, just by way of warning from the past. I love this. I shared this earlier today. I found reference to it via a post that Charlie Pierce put up. But but it wasn't in the same context, and all of a sudden, and I just went, holy cow, would you look at that? It is a... quote from Abigail Adams. Now, if you are a longtime listener to Dr. Bill O'Brien, and if you aren't, why aren't you? Because if you listen to Dr. Bill O'Brien, you're going to know more American history than just about anybody in your neighborhood and quite possibly your town. That's how good Dr. Bill is. You know, he's changed his time. He's on from 1 to 3 now, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Tuesdays is 1:30 to 3 because he has meeting obligations. But a long time ago during the PRISM American History program, I learned about the brilliant correspondence between Abigail Adams and John Adams, which survived the flames. You know, a lot of people back in the day insisted in their wills that their papers, their personal papers, be burnt. Every now and then, with an eye toward history, they weren't burnt. And that's the case of the correspondence between John and Abigail. It was March the 31st, 1776, the Declaration of Independence, which Dr. Bill is spending these 3 days this week in advance of Independence Day, talking about a much better understanding of its origins than what is publicly and popularly put out. Hence, I recommend you get today's podcast and be tuned in live tomorrow at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time, or else get the podcast at 1 p.m. on Wednesday. You're going to want this. But it was the 31st of March, 1776. The publication of the Declaration of Independence was three months and change away. But Abigail Adams knew what John had been working on, and he was working with Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson on a draft of a Declaration of Independence from the English crown. And Abigail Adams was thinking about what should be in that declaration. And Abigail Adams was no intellectual slouch. She was absolutely the intellectual equal of John, and John was no dummy. And so she writes this letter to her husband John, whom she misses dearly. They loved each other. He missed her down in Philadelphia, and she missed him up, you know, somewhere near Boston. And she said, and I love the language they used then. She said, I long to hear that you have declared an independency. How many times, how many times have we used that kind of language, say, in the last year? How long have we felt so passionately about something that we said we longed for something? I long to hear that you have declared an independency. And by the way, in the new code of laws, which I suppose it will be necessary for you to make, dig that. She's not just thinking about a Declaration of Independence. She's thinking about the nitty-gritty business of crafting a legal code for a new country. She, in her mind, the cause is so just, they've already won the revolution that must surely come. Lexington and Concord have already happened. You know, that's 1775. This is March 31st, 1776. She knows there will be hostilities because the hostilities are in her neighborhood. And by the way, in the new code of laws, which I suppose it will be necessary for you to make, I desire you would remember the ladies and be more generous and favorable to them than your ancestors. Do not put such unlimited power into the hands of the husbands. Remember, all men would be tyrants if they could. If particular care and attention is not paid to the ladies, we are determined to foment a rebellion and will not hold ourselves bound by any laws in which we have no voice or representation. Wow. Should we just declare her a prophet and have done? All men would be tyrants if they could. How true that was proven. Today, June the 30th, 2014, years after the day that this was written, if particular care and attention is not paid to the ladies, we are determined to foment a rebellion and will not hold ourselves bound by any laws in which we have no voice or representation. Sadly, John did not pay attention. There was no mention of the rights of women in the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths that all men are created equal. They were observing the tradition, the linguistic convention whereby using the masculine generally was meant to include the female. Bull. These were not illiterate men writing this document. If they had said, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all persons are created equal, the Declaration of Independence would never have been signed. We're going to let who do what? And this is important in part because you've got nasty old right-wing frauds like David Barton running around making the argument that women's suffrage was a terrible idea. That the only reason men had the vote was because in colonial America, men voted for their entire household, which is just utterly made-up rubbish. Men voted men, and women got no vote. And it didn't matter if you were male and 21, if you didn't own you some property, you wasn't voting. Remember the ladies. I just wonder, everywhere that the rats go, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, do they have bodyguards with them? What would happen? I mean, how far under some godforsaken supermax prison would we stick a woman who just walked up to fat Tony Scalia and slapped him so hard that his spit flew backwards? What would happen if the rats could never go out in public lest some aggrieved female come up and backhand them? Would a Secret Service officer kill a woman for merely trying to show that level of disrespect for people who have manifested in print their own disrespect for every woman in this country? I don't know. And you know what? We can't very well ask the Supreme Court neither, because they're gone on vacation. here endeth the filibobster. We're halfway done with the program. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. To resist because, well, if I could, if I had a little production help, we could turn that into a brilliant parody. Because, you know, vacation, contraception, T-I-O-N-C. Contraception had to take it away. You know, that kind. We could do it. This is The Horn. This is Moran Monday, and we got plenty of Morans to deal with along the way. And thanks going out. In addition to Sandra and Leroy and Dave, thanks going out to Sal, who is there this evening, helping us to meet the evening's fundraising goal. We're trying to raise the usual evening's $150. And thanks to Thomas, who just took that down and joined in with Sal. Thank you very much for helping take down the total, Thomas. It is much appreciated. A reminder. The phone line is open, 304-574-8178, 304, well, it's not open, there's somebody on it right now, but this is Conversation Radio, and it is Moran Monday, and we have more Morans than just the rats on the Supreme Court. Let's go to the phones. I think we have Bill. Hey, Bill.
How you doing?
I'm good. How about you?
Well, I'm okay. You're loaded up tonight.
Well,
let's start with the Hobby Lobby. What do they sell people out of that place?
Oh, you know, they sell string and yarn and tape and paint and picture frames and all kinds of stuff for doing your handicrafts.
See, we used to go to the Hobby House in Cleveland, and there you bought your model cars, planes.
Right, that's what I thought. That's what I thought the one time I walked in there. I thought, yeah, hey, maybe I'll get back into doing models. That could be fun. No.
Well, we learned one thing about the models. when you were done gluing it back together, you knew why you felt funny. You're familiar with that, of course.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I even remember when they added a little smell to it. It smelled kind of orangish.
Yeah, because that stuff was, you'd get high on that stuff. In fact, there was a whole problem in the 70s, maybe even into the 80s, with glue sniffers. They became another gift to the society. Yeah, so basically hobbies to me were things you built. I mean, I guess it's, but I'm surprised that somebody needs to set up a business. How were people doing this years ago, Bob? Because women had been, you know, I remember my mother knitting and my aunts and that, and people sewing, knitting, that was a hobby, you know. Up until 10 years ago, I still had a scarf my mother knit for me. So, you know. Yeah, but this stuff is scary.
Well, understand though, the Green family found a niche market because they're religious fundamentalists, and there are a lot of women in religious fundamentalist circles who have church groups where they go and they quilt, or they go and they knit, yeah, and they go and they embroider, and they do all kinds of different stuff. So, in the name of Jesus, they said, these people are spending their money with heathens. Why can't they be spending their money with us?
Well, you're saying it's one hell of a good sales tactic to become
they're religious hustlers.
Because my problem, Bob, is I don't know if these people really believe this stuff or not.
In this case, the only thing the Greens believe in is money.
That's what I thought, you know.
And this is about...
I was thinking, you said Quaker, and I couldn't think of the guy's first name, Smedley.
Butler.
I think Smedley Butler was a Quaker.
I do believe so.
Originally. He put that to good use, didn't he? Well, so much for that idea.
You want another famous Quaker?
Yeah.
Richard Nixon.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, he had that in his background, didn't he? Oh, boy. You know, Cleveland has a place which was at one time, it was a planned community developed in the 20s and 30s, and it's called Shaker Heights. And it was very, very big money area at one point. Now it's, more. There's still tremendous financial areas, you know, houses and such, that I feel like they might arrest me if I walk by the house, you know, one of those things. But, yeah, these two brothers developed that, and... Because the Shakers lived up there. Shakers were, maybe somebody can Google it, but they were some kind of a religious bunch too, except they were celibate.
Yes.
Which is like, aren't you painting a dead end door in front of you with that?
But there's nothing new in that, Bill, because, some of the earliest Christian sects were celibate. They believed that the end of the world was coming soon, and that the only way that they could be as pure as their Savior was to be celibate. In fact, they were deemed heretical because the church felt like unless the laity was out there copulating like bunnies, well, how was the church going to have any? How was the church going to have little babies to baptize and indoctrinate and, you know, ruin their brains?
Putting money in the basket was a thing that got a lot of people out of Catholicism in the early 1900s. We had a lot of people from Eastern Europe in particular who were very religious in the old country. And they come over here and this guy or that priest or this monsignor, he's griping at them and they aren't contributing enough money to him. And that drove my grandmother out of the church. She said, the hell with this. Pulled her five kids out of parochial school and said, I'm not here to, you know, to contribute money to this place so they can spend more of it on the church. And of course, out of that little thing developed some of these great church festivals that we used to have here in Cleveland. In an area that was known as literally, they used to have a big statue of the Virgin on a trailer, and this thing would be going down the road, just money pinned to it. People, coming up and pinning money to the statue.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus, that's
and a lot of this stuff is, it's even transmillennials. This stuff goes back to the way the Romans celebrated their festivals. In ancient Rome, you would carry the icon of your deity, and people would throw money at it.
Good hustle, man. Being a preacher is always been good hustle.
There were guilds that were periodically suppressed. Ancient Roman religion felt like crossroads. You know, just two places where roads crossed were particularly susceptible to some sort of supernatural occurrence. So there would be crossroads colleges. They were literally called colleges. And tradesmen and people in the neighborhood would maintain the college there at the crossroads and maintain the requisite devotional shrine. And there'd probably be a little taverna there and sell wine and bread and cheese and stuff like that to maintain the shrine.
Well, I know what, as time went on, people got really big with the Templars and the Hospitallers. You know, they were big in the Middle Ages.
They rose up with the coming of the First Crusade and the preaching of the First Crusade.
Yep.
You know, the Pope stands up there and says, "Listen, go kill Muslims and Jews and take over the Holy Land. And if you do that, I promise all your sins will be forgiven, and you'll go right to the bosom of the Lord."
And so you had a bunch
of these guys who were basically violent thugs in the first place, and they took up the cross. They took literally a white tunic with a big red cross on it, and it was really handy for Europe because they got the bad guys to go somewhere else.
Yeah, I never looked at it from the standpoint of getting these guys. Yeah.
Because in terms of dollars reduced to present value, it cost roughly as much in money for that time period to equip a knight as it takes to put a tank in the battlefield today. Armored knights were the equivalent of a tank.
Yep.
And it was good as far as it went, but then when the Crusades collapsed, they came home.
Yeah.
And they had and the Hospitallers and the Templars had amassed tremendous amounts of money. France was dying for money. The papacy was broke. And so here in particular are the Templars who are loaning money at interest, which is forbidden by the New Testament.
Yes.
And funding government and all of this stuff. And the French king, Philip, looked at the Templars and said, "They're heretics." And the Pope said, "Why?" And he said, "Because money." And so the Templars were suppressed, and the money and all the riches were confiscated by the crown.
Wasn't the French hold the Frankish kingdom of Jerusalem for about 75 years, and then Saladin?
The whole thing was referred to as the Kingdom of Outre-mer. And it was Outre-mer.
It sounded like you said the kingdom of who's the mayor. Would you repeat that one?
Yeah. Outre-mer, Outremer. And it was an artificially created European-style government that had been just forced upon the people who already lived there.
It
was great as long as they could hold it. But once European support for it fell away, it fell apart too. There might be a historical lesson to be learned in all of that, but who the hell am I?
Well, when they captured Jerusalem in the First Crusade, the streets ran red with blood, Bob.
Because the Crusaders, in the name of Jesus Christ, slaughtered every Jew and every Muslim that they came in contact with.
Mm-hmm. Not a real great way to win friends and influence people, isn't it?
And this stuff, you know, this stuff devils us down through the centuries, Bill, because I remember when when George the Dumber was starting his war against the people of Iraq, and he referred to it as a crusade.
Yeah, well, I've used that name crusade in Europe, but it made...
It doesn't mean the same thing. It doesn't mean the same thing to say it in Europe as it means to say it in the Middle East, because crusade means war for the cross. It means that Christianity is invading you.
Maybe, and I don't even know if that was Ike's made up the use of that word, or he was told to by somebody else. I'm old, but I wasn't that old, you know.
When Dim Leader was putting together the coalition of the Billing, Spain sent troops to Iraq.
Yeah.
And they sent them, and they were wearing, I kid you not, the cross of St. James on a patch on their uniforms.
Oh, for Christ. Well, the first...
Don't you imagine that? Just, and I don't care if you're Shia or Sunni or Kurd or whatever. You got soldiers showing up in your country wearing the cross of St. James. That's going to go over like a turd in a punch bowl.
Well, the original George Bush, that war was well put together. There were Syrians. I think there were some Egyptians. Of course, there was French Legionnaires and Americans and British. And I think there was a lot more backing for that one because of, what this guy did, what Saddam did was something that is not really well looked upon of attacking another Muslim country. It was traditionally something that was not really,
No, it was traditionally... It was traditionally done all the time, but for instance, the April Glaspie cable, back when Bush the Smarter was trying to get his Bush War One on, the Glaspie cable says we take no position on Arab versus Arab conflicts, and so Saddam sees that and says it's on. These little Kuwaitis have been stealing my oil. I'm going to get it back.
Yeah, you hit something. They were slant drilling, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. And by the way, going back to the Templars for a second, a little piece of trivia coming in from Ron in Raleighville. He says, and that's why Philip, the King of France, offed the Templars on Friday the 13th. That's why Friday the 13th is considered bad luck. And that's true. The Grand Master of the Templars was burned at the stake on Friday the 13th.
I remember there was incidents where the Templars were holding Rhodes, I believe, or Cyprus.
The Templars guarded the road from Acre to Jerusalem.
Well, at one point they were lodged. This was after the failure of the Crusades. They were lodged in Cyprus, and this time the nation, the Turks, which became the leading name for Middle East power, the Turkish Empire, the Ottoman Empire. Well, you call it whatever you want to call it, but you're familiar with those names,
Yeah, May the 1453?
Yeah, they turned they marched the Templars out and killed them all. See, that's one thing about this kind of behavior. In all honesty, it's not limited to any one group of people. The only thing I can't think of is the Tibetans ever marching next door and destroying stuff,
I'm not so sure. Well, I mean, there was certainly some nasty business that went on during the reign of Kublai Khan.
Yeah, oh, God, yes. That man made it as far as Baghdad. He took Baghdad. Mm-hmm. That's a long way by horse, isn't it, Bob? And on foot.
I was going to say, more so if you're walking.
Jeez. Human nature astounds me. What bothers me is it seems that a lot of folks will always find some reason and way to go kill somebody else. But let me just jump on the story about this radio geek. Oh, I mean, it's one thing to tell me that he was assaulting children. That's bad enough. But it sounds like he was killing them. Is that what they're looking for with this guy?
He is charged with one count of child sexual assault. But his little suitcase certainly makes you, well, I'm sure they're going over it all to see if there's any DNA on him.
Yeah. What are your lay odds on this guy's survival time in prison?
Don't care.
No, me neither. But I wouldn't put any money on the long,
This guy challenges my, I, as a matter of general principle, oppose the death penalty. Because it has been proven that it has been used with far too much racial bias in this country, and far too often we have sent innocent people to their deaths.
Yeah,
but
if you could
prove lead pipe cinch that this guy did what he did, I'm not so sure that my opposition to the death penalty can stand up against that.
Well, that's true. Well, you saw what happened to the guy in Minnesota. The man who was, his said a joke about him, the bad joke that I heard was, a mind is a terrible thing to baste. I mean, Bob, I've heard them all.
Oh, Jeffrey Dahmer.
I don't know if I hang with the wrong couple bunch or what, but somebody always has something to say that, I will not laugh at it, but the sardonic smile might appear on my face. Yeah, that's the way this guy was thinking, you know. And, of course, he did not last long in prison, did he? If my memory is correct.
No, your memory is correct.
I don't know. It looks like I just got a close thing on the computer, so we may be off the air.
No, we're not. We're still...
Okay, I don't know what the hell this is, man. Let me see here. Well, I'm not getting you. I'm not getting you on the computer.
You're not hearing me now?
I'm hearing you on the phone, Bob.
Well, you're hooked up to your, oh, okay. Yeah, all right. No.
Yeah.
No, you're on the phone, so it doesn't, but anyway. No, we'll clear the line. I filibustered too long anyway. We'll give other folks a chance to chime in on this.
Well, I won't keep it too long, but the other thing I'll say is I just, got through the first third of The Guns of August. I haven't read that since I was a kid, you know. But it's still good. And, of course, my problem is I can't get enough stuff on. A buddy of mine is sending me a book that Max Hastings wrote about World War One. It came out 2 years ago, and it's on TV. Because I could never, Bob, I could never learn enough. There's always something that you miss the first time around, you know. Because my God!
Without a doubt, I heard something, but just by way of counterpoint, I heard a report on public radio the other day coming out of Bosnia, and it was about the fact that Sarajevo is absolutely awash in people there to commemorate the beginning of the First World War.
That's good, man. Yeah.
And Bosnia is not in good shape at all. And there were people. There were people who were interviewed who said, "All of these people are coming here to take note of something that happened 100 years ago, and we've got people starving now, and it's insulting."
Yes, it probably is, because the truth of the matter is, after all Europe went through in two massive wars, not to mention Asia. I mean, I keep learning. I just learned last year from Max Hastings' book called Retribution that when the Japanese took Burma, they cut off a huge rice supply to what would be East India, and there was at least three million people starved to death just because Churchill didn't do anything to bring food in. The more I learn, the more I want to give it up. But anyway, you hang in there and take care.
I'm going to try. Thanks, Bill. You have a good evening. My buddy Bill calling from Cleveland, Mr. Stress, the one and the only. The phone line is open if you want to participate in the conversation. 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. Yeah, we do have other Moran Monday stuff, and more and stuff that's not even Moran stuff. It's just terrifying. And what do I mean by that? I noticed earlier today that an announcement has come out of Israel that three bodies have been found buried in a field in Hebron that are believed to be the three missing teenagers who were kidnapped over 2 weeks ago. And there is outrage in Israel. There is screaming for blood. Eyal Yifrach, Gilad Shar, and Naftali Frankel. 19 years old, 16 years old, and 16 years old. Were kidnapped as they were hitchhiking between, I guess, Jerusalem and Hebron. I don't know the geography that well. It's in the occupied West Bank. And I read this story, and having followed this story in the past couple of weeks, with horror for the parents, and just the horror that attends that entire miserable, godforsaken place, when I saw that the bodies had been found, Jesus, who knows what kind of retribution the IDF will extract on the Palestinians for this. Because if we know one thing, we know that even though certain rules and laws have been developed over the past century in regard to civilian populations, one of which is that collective punishment is about as nasty as you can get, we know that the Israelis, well, they're willing to engage in it. We saw it in Gaza. How many times have we seen it? The use of white phosphorus munitions. And it's so sad, because God knows how many innocents will be collectively punished for the monstrosity that was the murder of these three teenagers. By the way, Naftali Frankel has United States citizenship, and I'm sure that will be a rallying cry of its own sort. And of course, when I read that, the first thing I thought of was the American citizen who was killed execution style by the IDF on that attempt to bring relief past the blockade of Gaza. Because that's all the whole region is. It's just an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, and nobody's got any teeth and nobody's got any eyes. And the one-eyed man is king, as the saying goes. The other thing I thought of when I saw that story was something that came from the Columbus Dispatch at the beginning of this month. Another horror. Not the beginning, the middle of the month. June 13th was the dateline for the story from the Columbus Dispatch. Hours after arriving in Israel for their twice-yearly visit with their father, a young brother and sister from Columbus, Ohio, were killed by him, according to Israeli media and local Jewish community leaders. Sarah and Yishai Levy, ages 10 and 11, respectively, lived in Columbus with their mother, Karen Levy, but went to their father's home in Yashresh in early June for a summer visit. The couple were divorced. On Wednesday evening, June the 11th, the father walked to the police station, looked at the police officers, and said, I have killed my children. When emergency responders arrived at the home, they found little Sarah Levy and little Yishai Levy stabbed to death by their father. Apparently, it had been an ugly custody fight, and Mrs. Levy had filed two separate domestic violence petitions against Mr. Levy in 2005 and 2009, back when they still lived in Israel before the divorce. The two children and the mother had eventually had to seek shelter in a domestic violence facility before they could make their escape to America. The Israeli court permitted Mrs. Levy and the children to go to America, but insisted that the two children would have to be returned to Israel twice yearly for visitation with their proven domestically violent father. Little Sarah Levy was in the fourth grade and Yishai was in the fifth. So the next time you run across some news story about the barbaric Arabs, the barbaric Muslims, and their honor killings, remember, nobody has a lock on it. Nobody. And then something I noticed over the weekend, apparently things are not going so swimmingly in Afghanistan. You know, we hardly talk about Afghanistan anymore. I sat down and watched the documentary. I think I mentioned this. I watched the documentary follow-up to Restrepo recently. It's called Korangal. And it was a harrowing thing to watch. But we tend, you know, Afghanistan's out of sight and out of mind. We're going to get out of there, right? And then I'm sure Dick Cheney will be somewhere to, because you caught this too, right? Dick Cheney said that Barack Obama had to get out of Iraq because he wanted to use the money for food stamps. No, really. He said that. He's that evil. He's that wicked. Man. If I was just a little... No, can't. Because secular humanists don't do imprecatory prayer, but really... I'd love to see Dick Cheney with that little umbrella. Mother. Oh, I ran across this in the New York Times, Dateline Kabul. In one of the most significant coordinated assaults on the government in years, the Taliban have attacked police outposts and government facilities across several districts in northern Helmand province, sending police and military officials scrambling to shore up defenses and heralding a troubling new chapter as coalition forces prepare to depart. The attacks have focused on the district of Sangin, historically an insurgent stronghold and one of the deadliest districts in the country for the American and British forces who fought for years to secure it, and didn't. The Taliban have mounted simultaneous attacks. Get this. Simultaneous attacks. You can't just do this if you're a few guys wandering around with AK-47s on the street, all right? The Taliban have mounted simultaneous attempts to conquer territory in the neighboring districts of Nowzad, Musa Qala, and Kajaki. In the past week, more than 100 members of the Afghan forces and 50 civilians have been killed or wounded in fierce fighting, according to early estimates. The battle in Helmand is playing out as about 1,500 miles to the west, Iraq is losing ground to an insurgent force that advanced in the shadows of the American withdrawal there. The fear pulsing through Afghanistan is that it, too, could fall apart.
Could? Really? Could? We're using could? It will fall apart, because there was no there in the first place. I got to thinking the other day, over the weekend, about all the generals, that if you could get them up out of the dirt and have a conversation with them, hey, General Patton, what do you think about invading Afghanistan? He'd take his gloves off and beat you to death with them. Hey, Ike, let's conquer Afghanistan. Are you nuts? Hey, you got a big old ego, MacArthur? I'll bet you could take Afghanistan. Not on your life. Grant wouldn't do it. And yet, we had geniuses in the Pentagon who, with the immediate hindsight of the Russian failure in Afghanistan, said, yeah, you know, but those are the Ruskies. Yeah, we'll do it right. We'll surge and stuff.
Haji Muhammad Sharif is district governor of Musa Qala. He said, the Taliban are trying to overrun several districts of northern Helmand and find a permanent sanctuary for themselves. From there, they pose threats to the southern parts of Helmand and also pose threats to Kandahar and Oruzgan province. Wow. One of the things, if you get a chance to watch Korangal, one of the young American troopers, and it's stunning, it is stunningly beautiful country, says, I didn't know what I was getting into when I came to Afghanistan, but I looked around here, it's just like Colorado. I mean, if these people had stopped fighting and just let us do what we do, we could turn this into a resort area that'd make millions. And that little moment was so telling. Poor fella. And I'm not mocking him. I'm not in the least. He's trying to do a job that he's been trained to do, a member of the volunteer military. He's managed to stay alive as long as he has. And he is so absolutely dipped by the heel in imperialist commercial capitalism that he looks at Afghanistan and doesn't see the graveyard of empires that it is. He sees ski lifts. And then, of course, there was the obligatory scene where the officer, the captain, comes back having met with the elders of the village and says, I don't trust a one of them. They'll take whatever it is we have to give them, and then they'll take whatever it is the Taliban have to give them, and they're just trying to stay alive, but you can't trust them as far as you can throw them. Well, Captain, how much could anybody trust you if you had an imperialist invader from half a world away, camped out on a hill overlooking your village, ready to shoot anything that moves? There is the obligatory cheerleading within the New York Times article. Northern Helmand is a small region with a history of troubles. Despite the recent Taliban gains, the area is far from lost. With its austere deserts interrupted by dense lines of foliage hugging the Sangin River, the district has long been marooned in a sea of Taliban support. It is also squarely in the heart of poppy country, a vital and growing source of income for the insurgents. This, as the saying goes, will not end well. Going back to the story, stories out of Israel, Ron in Raleigh writes, remember, Bob, when President Not Sure said to Bibi Netanyahu about the IDF after they executed an American citizen, I think they showed remarkable restraint. Ron says, that's the moment I cut Barack Obama loose. Marty notes, I hate to sound conspiratorial, but can I take odds the Mossad were the kidnappers and killers? And then there's Rachel Corrie. You know, there's just too much there. There's much too much. The word unbearable comes to mind. And there will never be peace. And I'm a guy who favors peace. There will never be peace. And, of course, being Monday, we need to catch up with the bloodshed over the weekend. Let's check in San Diego. I don't know this. I don't know the geography of San Diego very well, but we have friends in the Horn family commune who do. I don't know what Fiesta Island is, but apparently there's a Boy Scout camp there. Somehow or another, a young scout, 12 years old, managed to get a firearm, a pistol, and take it with him to Boy Scout camp. At the Boy Scout camp, the 12-year-old boy took the pistol that he had secreted into camp and shot himself in the head, quite deliberately. It's not like the gun went off because he was mishandling it. He committed suicide. 7:35 a.m. This morning. Oddly enough, they didn't shut down the Boy Scout camp. They didn't call parents and tell them to come get their kids. They said they'd make counselors available. Scouts. Yeah. And then there's New Orleans. Dear Jesus, New Orleans. I don't know why I was shocked by this story, but I guess I was. It's 2:45 in the morning, Saturday night, Sunday morning. And a couple of people on Bourbon Street start arguing with one another. One guy's mad at the other guy. And then one of the guys who were mad just turned around and started shooting into the crowd. Because freedom. Wolverines! At least 9 people were injured, 1 or 2 of them critically so. If you want to go to New Orleans and have a good time, Bourbon Street is not the place to have it. It's a tourist trap. But you take the walk down Bourbon Street once because, you know, you were there. There are some bars that are fun, some less so. But now, because Bourbon Street can get crowded,
It's just another place on the American map where you can get Second Amendmented right out of existence. Because this here's America. On and on and on. And then there's Ohio. This is an interesting take on the whole freedom protecting business. Little community called Toronto, Ohio. Three kids, not even teenagers, preteens, as the news report from WTOV Channel 9 notes. A 10-year-old, an 11-year-old, and a 12-year-old. They got together, found themselves some booze. The 12-year-old then boosted a handgun from his mom's boyfriend. The 12-year-old is a little girl, by the way. Who says this country doesn't have gender equality? She boosted her boyfriend's gun out of the house because the boyfriend didn't have it locked up, and then decided to go out and shoot the gun and get drunk. They ran around the neighborhood getting drunk, pointing the loaded firearm at children, and they threatened to, and terrorizing the children by threatening to pull the trigger. They were missing for 2 days like this. That's what WTOV TV Channel 9 reported, but one of the mamas said, "Three-quarters of this story is untrue, but I guess you have no other news to report. You make up more to make it more dramatic." I wonder which three-quarters. Does the quarter that involves them stealing booze, pointing the gun at little children, and running around with a firearm, is that part true? Because law enforcement authorities have charged the 10-year-old, the 11-year-old, and the 12-year-old little girl with possession of stolen property, theft of a firearm, and illegal consumption of alcohol. I don't know if Ohio is so brutal as to have a law that allows these children to be charged as adults and sent to an adult lockup. That's not clear. But remember, these firearms have to be accessible to children in order for them to be accessible to adults, because this is a dangerous, dangerous, terrifying country, at least in part because of children's access to firearm, but loop back around. Thanks very much to Ed for jumping into the fundraising efforts this evening. Thank you very, very much, Ed. It looks like we've got a fighting chance to finish June in fairly good order. Texas Betsy sent this one along to me. You want to talk about gender disparity? So we all know what boys and girls state is, right? I hope. It's a program sponsored by the American Legion, which is a wildly right-wing organization. But Boys and Girls State has always been kind of seen as a pretty beneficial thing. The idea is to take high school kids and send them sort of to civics camp.
where they form little mock governments and they pass mock legislation and they have mock parties, political parties, not, oh, well, who knows. Well, this is a story that comes from the Burnt Orange Report, which is a really good progressive resource for keeping up with the lunacy that takes place in right-wing Texas politics. And the Burnt Orange Report got hold of some photographs, or got hold of some materials that came from Texas Boy State. Now, Boys State is some 920 high school students, high school boys. As Jess Stoner at Burnt Orange Report notes, they're referred to as statesmen. And they get together at the University of Texas at Austin, and they do politics. They run for offices, like I said. One young man was running for office, and his entire campaign speech was to walk up to the microphone and say, "Cold beer and titties!" Want to guess how much applause he got? They had two different parties they could divide into. One of the parties was the Federalist Party. See, just like the early American, early history of the Republic, the Federalist Party. And boys who joined the Federalist Party gathered under a banner of a girl in bikini with "Feds" written across her breasts. Then there was another bikini photo and that had "Feds support transparent policies" written on it. There was the Federalist Party, and the other party was the Nationalist Party. Really? The Nationalist Party? We can't come up with something better than that? Nationalist? And members of the Nationalist Party crafted a platform that required women to notify their community if they were pregnant or on welfare. One of the party leaders, in explaining the policy, said, "So you know how sex offenders have to go door-to-door? Basically, it's the same concept, except the teen pregnant mom has to go door-to-door. We're not trying to shame them. We're just trying to get them help from the community." Now, here's the fun part. There's not just a boys' state. There's a girls' state as well. At the Texas Girls' State Convention, according to Jess Stoner, instead of hollering "cold beer and titties," the young women passed legislation legalizing same-sex marriage. They crafted legislation to address rape on college campuses. And they held a debate on whether or not to raise the minimum wage. While the boys were looking at bikini pics, 30 members of the Texas legislature visited Boys State and spoke to the future young male leaders of Texas. Mm-hmm. Not a single member of the legislature of Texas visited Girls State. Maybe that's why Girls State was actually far more serious and far more of an educational event than Boys State.
More in Monday.
By the way, since I filibustered for so long about the Hobby Lobby decision, it's only fair to share with you the professional broadcast opinions of professional multimillionaire broadcasters. Oh, yes. Because they've got them. Boy, do they have them. Yeah. Flush Flimball? Yeah, this is only mildly disgusting. No, this is really disgusting. Who am I kidding? Remember, it was Flush Flimball who fired the first salvos in the Republican war against women with his sickening attacks on Sandra Fluck.
Despite what many on the left are saying today, despite what you're probably going to hear from a lot of people on the left, birth control is not what was banned by the Supreme Court. It's not what was on the docket, so to speak. In the Hobby Lobby case, narrow though it may be, the Supreme Court, by a 5-4 majority decision, defended liberty.
Sit, Liberty, sit.
And it should be noted that even after this decision, birth control remains widely available. It is dirt cheap, no matter where you want to go to get it.
Well, if you're making $50 million a year and you don't have a uterus, I guess $1,000 for an IUD is dirt cheap. Notice how he's picked up on the talking point. This is a narrowly construed ruling. The rats went to great lengths to explain that. Now, this is not going to keep people from having to get vaccinations or blood transfusions or bullshit. Then there's Eric Erickson.
My religion trumps your right to employer-subsidized, consequence-free sex.
Yeah, because birth control pills are only used by women with, for their sexy time. Pisses me off right smart. Because I know for a fact that birth control pills are prescribed for women who are not at all even remotely sexually active because their reproductive organs are not behaving properly. We do, after all, live on a poisoned planet where all kinds of weird chemicals and weird poisons do weird things to people's insides, among which are bringing on things like precocious puberty because of pseudo-estrogens that are put into our world by the people who make nasty chemicals because money. But all Eric Erickson can think about is consequence-free sex. And where is it? And why am I not having any of it? Well, keep tweeting like that, buddy, and you'll probably figure it out at some point. And then, you know, I mentioned how the first salvo was fired by Flush Flimball against Sandra Fluck. Eric Bowling. Somebody get eyeballs on Sandra Fluck. She may do something dumb. After all, now she has to pay for her own birth control. And then the sarcasm machine got hotted up by some creep named John Nolte, who said, "Oh, my dear God, women might have to go to Target for birth control. Hashtag Middle Ages." And Todd Starnes is apparently dumber than a bag of hammer handles, not even the actual hammers. SCOTUS decision is a victory for unborn babies. And then doubled down. Obama's plan to force Christians to fund abortions is thwarted. And then there's the don't know much about history division. Some idiot named Eric Metaxas. The only big downer in today's SCOTUS decision is that four of the nine justices voted for King George III instead of the Founding Fathers. Hashtag yikes. And then, oh my God. What did I tell you? If somebody brings a Christian a cold cup of coffee, they think they're being persecuted. The Franciscan University of Steubenville, and who knew there was one? Kinda now wish there weren't. Today is the memorial of the first martyrs of Rome, persecuted for their religious beliefs under Nero. Hashtag religious freedom. Hashtag Hobby Lobby. Yeah. The Franciscans jumped into the defense of a bunch of Baptist weirdos. And this is the one that just made me run screaming from the room. Over there at Fox News Radio TV Rwanda, Steve Doocy. We really haven't dragged out the duct tape and the hockey puck this evening, have we? Guess what? It's time. If we play our cards right and God grants us a favor, we can use this as a momentum changer. That's mainly thanks to the Green family, who just became the Rosa Parks of the religious liberty fight. Just as her refusal to comply with an unjust edict on a bus one day blew the lid off the civil rights movement, perhaps the Greens' refusal to comply with Obamacare's unjust edict can accomplish the same for a similarly worthy cause. But that won't happen if we settle for this win like we have all too many others. I wish the right wing would make their goddamn minds up as to who is the new Rosa Parks, Johnny Goddamn Manziel or the Green Goobers. Everybody can't be Rosa Parks. Then again, and this is a novel idea, why don't we just go about letting Rosa Parks be Rosa Parks? Rosa Parks worked her ass off every day. And even though she was working for piss wages, she still found time to get active in her community, to go up to the Highlander School in East Tennessee, to be taught how to go about campaigning for basic human rights and how to put those tactics and strategies in play back in Montgomery. I've mentioned this before, but apparently, not for you guys, but for these assholes, it bears mentioning again. By the way, all of these quotes can be found at Americans Against the Tea Party. Josh Kilburn with the report. Rosa Parks didn't refuse to give up her seat because she was tired and had aching feet and didn't want to move. It was a planned strategy. It was a triggering event. It was meant to happen. On the day that it happened, it was meant to happen. But no, she was just some tired negress who didn't want to give up her seat and knew that it was unjust for her to have to. And so she blew the lid off the civil rights movement. What even does that mean, blew the lid off the civil rights movement? Larry in the chat room. Bob, we are all Rosa Parks now, my friend. Jesus. I think Will from Chicago is flirting with imprecatory prayer. Bob, can I be pardoned for wanting these guys to get infested by the eggs of the titular creature in the Aliens movies and see how fast these fellows get the growing gift of life in them killed? I think there's no pardon called for, Will. Steve in China with a note. Bob, Genghis Khan gave up on the idea of conquering Afghanistan only because he realized that in order to effect a true victory, you must eventually kill everyone there. And this from a guy who turned around and went back home in the midst of actually conquering all of Europe. That's enough of a history lesson for me. Me too. Alexander the Great sorted it out. This is not going to work. I've even married one of their women, and I don't even like women. Didn't work. Note coming in from Danny in Louisianistan. Hola, Bob. Excellent and timely show as always. Regarding many, and especially recent SCOTUS decisions, this is what I've been in fear of for 20 years. In light of the corporate propaganda that has been so damned successful that we now have a significant part of our populace believing money is speech and corporations are people, today SCOTUS officially conferred religious rights upon corporations. So if I follow this to its logical conclusion, when do corporations get to vote? No, really. Not just voting with their money, but buying politicians outright. Not just voting with their money, buying politicians outright. When will our new religious corporate people get to literally cast their votes at the ballot box? How will this right for religious corporate people be allocated? Will one corporation get one vote? Or will it be one vote for each office or business location? Or will it be one vote for each employee? Will it be one vote for each outstanding share of stock? Can you imagine what 1.5 billion shares of stock will elect and then further decree by SCOTUS? We think money buys our elected leaders now, and they do. Wait until they literally vote for them in more numbers than we have people eligible to vote. May the gods forgive us all. Or will we then have a revolution? Have a good evening, and thanks as always. Signed, Danny. You have a good evening, and thanks as always, Danny. Devin, I think it does. Devin, with a sociological question, does this make Afghans sand borderers? They're hill people. Hill people have a common crankiness toward being ousted from their hills. They wouldn't be in the hills if the hills were easy to live in. They wouldn't be in the hills if they wanted to be interacting with people, with the flatlanders. Hillbillies is hillbillies is hillbillies is hillbillies. We don't understand that. The Pentagon thinks it's smarter than Alexander, Genghis Khan, and on and on and on. Yeah. As to Danny's question, how will that play out? Will we have a revolution? You know me. I'm real cynical on that point. I don't think we'll have a revolution until the cable goes out. And by then, it will be too damned late because someone will have turned off the cable. I still think the single best piece of civil disobedience action would be a giant, massive, multiple thousands of people sit-in at the Supreme Court, right in the middle of their buffer zone. Don't you? All the way up to the doors of the court. Now, leave a corridor open so people can come and go as they please. But sit a few thousand people down on that magnificent marble plaza. The John Roberts Memorial Buffer Zone. And just say, no, you can't have a buffer zone. You don't get one. Women don't get one. You don't get one. And have enough people streaming in that there's no way that the cops can control it, what are they going to do? Shoot us? Pepper spray us? Concussion grenade us? Once upon a time, one would not even ask that question in the United States. This is not that time. Where Afghanistan is concerned, Devin is 100% correct. The only way to win is not to play. Which is the exact opposite of what we're dealing with at home. Gotta get active. Gotta be in it. I've heard a lot of women from who are now of a certain age who were active in the initial struggle, the so-called women's liberation movement, and I don't say so-called because I'm trying to demean it. I say so-called because I call it feminism. And they bemoan the inactivity of young women in perpetuating the struggle, saying, you have no idea how hard we fought for whatever ground we gained. And here it is going away. Interesting. More End Monday. Sorry there wasn't more fun in the way of More Ends. I had some lined up. The right-wing candidate for office in Louisiana who says that climate change is a big lie and a 10-year-old can disprove it with a thermometer because every year is getting colder than the year before, even though it is uniformly understood that every year is actually hotter than the year before. Doesn't matter. If they said it, it must be true because they have faith. Oh, what else? Well, let's check in. See what else kind of weirdness there is out there. By the way, in case there's anybody out there who doesn't think that the Hobby Lobby decision affects them, you know, because of not having a uterus and whatnot, think again. Justice Ginsburg, in her dissent, points directly to that fact. She says, there's little doubt that RFRA claims, RFRA, Religious Freedom Restoration Act, because, well, what's to restore? Little doubt that that RFRA claims will proliferate, for the court's expansive notion of corporate personhood, combined with its other errors in construing RFRA,
invites for-profit entities to seek religion-based exemptions from regulations they deem offensive to their faith. Even if one were to conclude that Hobby Lobby and Conestoga meet the substantial burden requirement, the government has shown that the contraceptive coverage for which the ACA provides furthers compelling interests in public health and women's well-being. Those interests are concrete, specific, and demonstrated by a wealth of empirical evidence. The absence of such precedent is just what one would expect, for the exercise of religion is characteristic of natural persons, not artificial legal entities. Workers who sustain the operations of those corporations commonly are not drawn from one religious community. Indeed, by law, no religion-based criterion can restrict the workforce of for-profit corporations. Something wicked this way comes. Oh, yes, indeed. Thank you to Glenn for joining in on tonight's fundraising. Thank you very kindly. It is much appreciated as we head toward trying to finish off June to the good. And sort of dovetailing with what Danny was writing about a few minutes ago in terms of corporations voting, Robert in Morgantown asks, if corporations are people, can Hobby Lobby run for president? I despair of the legal analysis that would attend that. And we have spent next to no time whatsoever on Harris versus Quinn. That may have to wait till tomorrow, because it deserves a lot of time. If you sit and you ponder what it means, and Alito, as predicted, Alito did write the opinion. What they're working toward, you know, it's been the wet dream of the right wing to completely undo unions in this country and to force the American people out of unions and into the free market wonderland. And this is a big step in that direction. The right to work creeps had formerly been forced to work from state to state to state. Michigan, for instance, being a recent convert to right-to-workism. And look how that's working out. It could be, with a little dose of judicial activism, that right-to-work can be made the law of the land by the Supreme Court of the United States. And there will be not the first complaint from all of those right-wing hypocrites who holler about judicial activism. Look, when you craft an opinion that says a corporation has religious views, you're pretty well down the judicial activism rabbit hole. And they went running down it with the decision. Now, right-wingers like to talk about freeloading and mooching. The genesis of the case coming out of Illinois is just sickening. And it has to do with this right-to-work organization that trolls, you know, it drags a dollar bill down a dirt road and somebody's bound to pick it up. health workers who were severely underpaid in Illinois organized under the banner of the SEIU, the Service Employees International Union. And under Illinois law, because even if you don't want to join SEIU, you still have to contribute to your own well-being. You cannot expect the union to negotiate your higher wages, which they did. Their wages went from $7 an hour to more than 11, with a raise scheduled to 13 in the very near future. You can't just freeload on that. Until now. Because again, the first poor little dollar bill in the dirt road picker uppers were oppressed by the SEIU and cheated of their freedom of speech, because money is speech, by having to pay dues to an organization that gets them higher wages. This is rapidly becoming a most terrifying country in which to live. Thank you, one and all. Thank you. Oh, and thanks going out to Beth. Thank you, Beth, for helping out in reaching tonight's fundraising goal. Yes, indeed. Deeply appreciated. And we're finishing June okay. Now we get to start on July. Yay, us. And probably tomorrow evening. Remind me. The 4th is on Friday, Independence Day. And we'll talk a little about some scheduling, program schedules and stuff. I don't like being away from the microphone, but I have stuff that has got to be addressed here at the mansion. And hopefully, maybe over the long weekend we'll get that done. I don't know. I might actually take a day off if that can safely be done. I don't know. I welcome your thoughts. So thanks, everybody, for your participation this evening. Thanks for your emails and your tweets. Thanks for your Facebook participation. It's always good to see a good crowd in the chat room, as we have this evening. And thanks for carrying us through another month of independent, unbeholden broadcasting. Unbeholden to anyone except the community here that makes the determination month in and month out that the horn will continue to exist. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox down in Australia, up in Australia. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT, A-C-H-E-A-C-T, .O-R-G. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.